The difficulty in terms of this cultural shift, I think, is the medium. You are in the image, you are part of the scene, and you are in a participatory way. And I think that's what has people concerned.
We're talking about video games on today's edition of Come Receive the Light and their increased realism and the impact they're having on the lives, especially of younger users. And some say they move anyone playing them in an unhealthy direction toward a fantasy world.
There's also common sense that tells you that the more that you feed yourself with violence and with the violent imagery and surround yourself with it, you would have this ability to make the step from fantasy to reality.
Anyone who's played any video games or watched them being played knows that realism and violence are two key ingredients that everything is moving toward. That's our featured conversation on today's edition of Come Receive the Light. We're also going to talk about the stress brought on by the holiday season and how we can cope with it. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, and I'm Mike Trout.
Therefore, do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles seek all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be yours as well. Therefore, do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Let the day's own trouble be sufficient for the day.
The words of Jesus found in Matthew chapter 6, verses 31 through 34, a portion of the Sermon on the Mount and read by our first guest today, and a fitting introduction to our first conversation on today's edition of Come Receive the Light. We are an outreach ministry, a broadcast outreach ministry of the Orthodox Christian Network, and we can be found on the web at myocn.org. .net. I encourage you to check us out there, myocn.net. You can also interact with us on Facebook and on Twitter. All those links are right there on the website. That's myocn.net. Father Chris will respond to you if you do get in touch with us when you go to the website, especially through Facebook or Twitter. We're with you each week with this particular broadcast at this same time on this same radio station. We can also be heard via the web. Just click on that CRTL link on our homepage, myocn.net. And now with our first conversation, here's our host, Father Chris.
Dr. Randa Karadzhi Anderson is a licensed clinical psychologist. She's with me today to talk about minimizing holiday stress. Welcome to the show, Randa.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What do you think are the main sources of holiday stress?
Well, in fact, researchers have studied this, and the most common sources of holiday stress that people identify are, first of all, lack of money, for gifts, for travel, special foods that we eat only at the holidays. And I think especially in these difficult financial times, many people simply don't have that extra disposable income. It's just not there, and this causes feelings of stress. Another stressor is lack of time to accomplish holiday-related tasks, and especially for women, because many of these things fall on women. Shopping can be quite time-consuming, decorating the home, cooking, party planning, preparing for out-of-town guests. I mean,
buying
all of
the gifts, buying the gifts for the people we love and the people we hate, right? One of those things.
Exactly.
Okay, I know.
Making that list and checking it twice.
Right.
You know,
it
takes time. And somehow we have to fit these extra tasks into what might already be busy lives, you know. Stress is not inherently a bad thing. Stress in small doses can actually be positive because it's what motivates us to action. I think it's when our stress levels exceed our confidence about coping that we start to have a problem. And we know from the research that excessive levels of stress for prolonged periods can be physically harmful to our bodies in the form of heart disease, high blood pressure. You know, so we really would be wise to get a handle on stress at the holidays and at other times in our lives in order to promote good health. And I just want to share a general coping strategy for all kinds of stress. Is to maintain a healthy lifestyle in the way of eating, sleeping, and exercise habits. And I know that sounds obvious, and you might not expect to hear that from a clinical psychologist. You know, that's what your primary care physician says to you. But, you know, study after study shows that when our bodies are well regulated in these areas, we have better emotional health. And so even during the holidays, we have to try to maintain our healthy routines. You know, it's really easy to say, forget the salad, I'm going to eat the plate of gingerbread then. But when we dramatically change our habits for the worse, we feel terrible physically, and it's just harder to manage our stress levels. And I want to point out that that's especially true for children. When they get out of their normal routines and become overtired or aren't eating properly, they can become very irritable.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. You probably know that.
I have six children and two grandchildren, so I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. Yes. And, you know, a crying, fussy child is enough to make any holiday feel stressful. So sure. Just keeping those general principles in mind, I think, is a place to start.
Okay. Sure. Let's look at the second one on your list, not feeling there's enough time to do everything. And that's got to be high this year, too. So many people are taking on second jobs. They're commuting further. What can you recommend as far as dealing with this type of stress?
Well, forget Martha Stewart, for one thing. You know, I think it's easy to have those images of the perfectly decorated home and the cookies baking in the oven. But again, we have to recognize our own limits and then set reasonable expectations. And here is where time management is a great coping strategy for stress. You know, it really does help to plan ahead. You know, don't let the holidays catch you off guard because you know they're coming.
Mm-hmm.
A little planning now can help relieve stress later, especially when you know there's going to be a time crunch. In my practice with my clients, I always check in with them in early November about plans for the holidays because I want them to start anticipating potential anxieties and conflicts so that we have plenty of time to talk about them in advance. You know, it's much easier to problem solve when you're not stressed out, you know, than when you're really in the thick of things and, you know, can't see as clearly.
Well, as we're discussing this, I want to point our listeners to the Facebook page of OCN, and I want them to go there and tell me what it is they're stressed about.
Ah, I like
that. And I think we'll try to help some of these folks out. Now, what are the tools that we have from our faith that you feel can help us stay centered and, I guess I'll use the term, sane during the busy holidays?
Well, I think the church gives us a huge tool for stress relief that is caused by overspending, overeating, and overindulging, and that's the vehicle of Advent. You know, as Orthodox Christians, we're called to a time of preparation for the birth of Christ, and that preparation comes through fasting, prayer, and almsgiving, you know, just as in Great Lent before Pascha. So if we take this time of preparation really seriously, and I know it's so hard to do when the world is telling us to eat cookies and throw parties. But if we take this time of preparation seriously, then we don't have to worry about when to get the pies baked because we're not going to eat them anyway.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, and I think fasting is a tool that the church gives us that helps us increase our trust and our dependency on God and detach from the material world. And at a time when materialism is running most rampant, you know, that fast is a very helpful tool. You know, I also think in terms of almsgiving, you know, doing a little volunteer work. I know it's hard to find the time, but even if it's, you know, not working in a soup kitchen, but, you know, adding an extra gift to your list for the, you know, the gift drive at the local grocery store or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, when we focus on the needs of others, we're then less focused on our own needs. And charitable giving, it is a stress reliever. It is. And, of course, in everything, prayer is essential. You know, when we start to feel overwhelmed, focusing on our prayer life and on reading the Bible can really help us regroup and focus on what matters.
One of my favorite prayers is by Filaret of Moscow. And the one line that I find particularly helpful is, "In all my deeds and words, guide my thoughts and feelings." I like that so much because it gets right to the heart of things. Of course, we don't want to do or say anything sinful, and we want to avoid that is to keep our thoughts and our feelings in check, of course. So what are some ways, finally, that we can kind of check in with ourselves to make sure our thoughts and our feelings are on course, especially during this time of year?
You know, I think that's a really good question because it actually raises yet another source of holiday stress. stress, and that is the stress we put on ourselves internally. You know, what we think about throughout the day contributes to how we feel. And so one tip I can offer is that when you start to feel the worry and stress getting out of control, you know, you can try one of my favorite techniques that I use with clients all the time, and that is to stop and ask yourself, what is the worst-case scenario here if I don't accomplish this task or if such and such happens? You know, and then how would I cope with that if this actually happens?
Okay.
You know, and I think when you ask yourself what's the worst that can happen, it really helps you recognize that the worst-case scenario isn't usually that terrible, you know, and it might even create a situation of spiritual or emotional growth. And then when you ask yourself how you might cope with that, you know, you then become motivated to find alternative solutions and and plan ahead.
Randa, this was a tremendous program, and I thank you truly for taking the time to be with us. And we hope you'll come back again soon.
Thank you. I appreciate the conversation.
Randa Anderson, a clinical psychologist, has been our first guest on today's edition of Come Receive the Light. And, of course, if you'd like to listen to this conversation again, just go to our website at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. Please pass along that information to your friends as well. We would appreciate knowing that you visited our website. Share with us your thoughts regarding this broadcast and any other resource we have available on the website. There are internet-only radio stations with both talk and music programming. We also have print resources available, which you can review and perhaps purchase from us. You can also donate to the ministry. We're a nonprofit outreach. You can become a partner in that way. You can also pray for us. Share with us your prayer requests as well. Give us your interaction on Facebook or Twitter. There are links for both of those when you go to the website. And you'll also find videos, teaching videos especially. It's all there and a lot more on the website myocn.net. Please do remember this is a worldwide outreach, and we need your help, your partnership in the effort. So get involved. We want this ministry to be inspirational, of course, engaging, enlightening, and edifying. And we need your help to do that. And now with our feature interview, here again is our host, Father Chris.
This past June, on the very last day of the 2011 term, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that minors have a right to purchase video games that include graphic violence. Here to talk with us about morality and video games is Father Demetrios Tonias, the pastor of Taxiarchy Archangels Church in Watertown, Massachusetts. Welcome back to the show, Father.
Good to be back, Father.
Okay, so now it's legal to sell violent video games to minors in this country. What's going on? Should we be shocked and outraged?
Maybe, maybe not. I think, rather, I would say we shouldn't be surprised. In terms of media and the popular arts, violence has always been a part of culture, and we can go to our own tradition. If you go back far enough into the Hellenic culture and into ancient Greece, certainly works like the Iliad are replete with some very violent scenes. And you go later on, it's not simply something that exists in the Mediterranean. Throughout European culture, anyone who's read Beowulf or the Song of Roland will know how, you know, very graphic and descriptive some of the language can be, especially in some of the battle scenes. It's shocking to read them. Now, of course, we're talking about a different media environment that comes to almost to the point of being photorealistic. I think that's the distinction that raises the shock and the alarm in people, that it's not something simply left to the imagination, but something that's very real and tangible and almost immersive in the way that the people, the children and adults participate in some of these games. So I think what's shocking is not so much the violence as it is the form and the medium through which it's communicated.
And nothing today, Father, correct me if you think I'm wrong here, but nothing today is done subtly. Everything today is in your face. It just has to be brought out. This is the best thing. You have to buy this. It's not, well, if you think about it and maybe it'd be something good. Now we actually have to make things legal. It's amazing what's happening.
Well, I mean, the legality issue is one in terms of, you know, what are people, what are children, especially we're talking about people who aren't children, who are under 18, and then even minors younger than that, what they should or should not be allowed to be exposed to. And certainly, you know, society's always put restraints upon that. But we're also living in a culture that celebrates freedom of speech, freedom of expression, and an exposure of a variety of points of view, you know, no matter, you know, to some extent, you know, how reprehensible we might feel that some of those expressions are.
Right. So let's look at it from two practical perspectives. One is that there are thousands of studies showing a link between violence in video games and violent behavior in real life. So how can this be a good thing, Father?
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of cliches, and we do like to say you are what you eat, and it is what we feed ourselves with. Certainly the studies that we point to, we should take them seriously, but as the old, you know, the old phrase goes as well, the old cliche, again, they're lies, damn lies, and statistics in terms of the linkage between the violent video games and actual violent behavior, because there are other parameters involved too. You have someone who would be in an environment predisposed to that regardless of the video game, and that obviously that needs to be taken into consideration. I think the great danger, though, that many people would point to would be a concern is that it would tend to desensitize people towards violence, that we have we are predisposed not to want to harm people. We are predisposed not to be in these violent confrontations. And the more you get desensitized to it, the more your mind can adapt to it. And, of course, take that next logical step. And certainly there are analytical studies like this can be done, but there's also common sense that tells you that the more that you feed yourself with, you know, with violence and with the violent imagery and surround yourself with it, you would have this, you know, this ability to make the step from fantasy to reality. I think probably what's the most pressing concern, though, is that someone who is in an environment where they would be predisposed to violence, it would, you know, help exacerbate what is already a difficult situation. I think that's the real important concern to focus on. And again, not to minimize any other concern in terms of a general concern about being exposed to violence, but those children, because we're talking about children here,
yes,
who are in a violent environment, and that only serves to exacerbate. And the last thing that the people who live in violent circumstances need is another violent impulse, you know what I'm saying?
I'm afraid,
pouring the proverbial fuel upon the fire.
Yeah, what I'm afraid is that the violence then becomes the standard.
Sure.
You and I are both parents, so let's think about that from the parental perspective. Do parents now need to be more watchful for their kids?
Yes, I mean, in a variety of ways. I think when we were kids, I mean, you know, you'd open up the door, you'd go outside, you wouldn't think anything of it. I don't know many parents who do that today. You know, I mean, you have to be watchful for your kids just in terms of the environmental nature that they live in. In terms of video games themselves, our children are a vessel, and we need to fill that vessel with things that are good, things that are positive, things that are morally, ethically, socially edifying. And in this way, when they encounter at a friend's house, or even in their own house or on TV, when they encounter these images, they know they're viewing them in a proper context, and they're able to contextualize, differentiate, and process and understand what's right and what's not, to divorce fantasy from reality and know where one ends and the other begins. And we always have to make sure that although there is that defense mechanism where we want to set up boundaries, and that's perfectly acceptable, and not just acceptable but desirable, we can't be totally focused on boundaries, because if we do that, you're just creating this, you know, this walled off environment, and you're not, you know, preparing for that inevitable day when your child, you know, God willing, transcends that wall and goes out into the world. So rather than considering, you know, just so much about boundaries, about what to keep out, the focus needs to be on what are we putting in, you know,
and that's
the ultimate challenge.
We can't live in a bubble, obviously. We have to be in the world, but not of the world. Is that
correct?
Okay. What are some things that would signal a problem to you? What are some of the suggested responses here for parents?
Behavior, I think, is the key thing to focus on. How is the child behaving? And you'll know that immediately in the home environment. How does your child interact with yourself and with others? I mean, there are children who are violent towards their parents. I think we've all seen this in our youth work. You hear children say things to their parents where you just kind of like, you know, you can't imagine it. You would cringe.
Mm-hmm,
I think either of us, you know, you straighten up a little bit. But how their behavior is in the home and with their friends and with others, the language that they use, is it violent language? Is it violent behavior? Is it self-oriented and selfish type of behavior? These are the big fundamental root causes. And simply removing a video game is not going to correct that issue. The video game introduced will worsen a bad situation, but you know it is the root behavioral causes and the actions of a child the parents always have to be aware on. And that's where the concern of the danger of video games is that they will start mimicking that behavior, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not the only behavior that's mimicked. It's how we act and comport ourselves in the homes. If parents are violent, certainly they pick up on that, right?
Absolutely.
If the school life, if the neighborhood environment is violent, certainly they will pick up on that in a much more real way. Video games and this type of immersive thing where they're acting it out often gives them a way to express that violence in a way that they probably couldn't do in the world, but they can do it in the video game.
Mm-hmm.
And then that will make that step out behind that barrier. So I think the focus needs to be on again, what we're filling our children up with, and that will make them, you know, into the people that we want them to be. And then they'll be able to make those choices for themselves. Because if you impose that choice on them, it's all negative, you're not going to do this video game, you're not going to watch this movie, you're not going to read this book, you're not going to do that. Well, what does that prepare them for?
That's right.
You know?
Yeah, it really doesn't. More generally, any specific guidelines that we could give parents about their kids and consuming of media?
Yeah. I think the general guidelines is, you know, you know there's always age appropriate material, and that is shifting. That's a shifting line, because you know children, you know, have the capacity to absorb things at different ages. I remember when I was in sixth grade, we read all kinds of great books. We read King Solomon's Mind, Shane. I mean, these are they're violent
stuff,
in these books, but they were for little boys, a sixth grade boy. It's great books to read. Tom Sawyer. But there was one book called Those Who Are About to Die, and it was a book. It was a historical book. It wasn't fiction. It was about the gladiators. But we had to get a permission slip to read it. You know, can you imagine that now? And by contemporary standards, it was beyond benign in terms of a book. But the teacher felt, you know, and we got to get it was almost like something exotic. Ooh, you can go read this book now. But I think what parents can do is establish certain parameters so the child is exposed to things and knows how to process things. And what that means is that do things together with a child. Watch movies together with your child to see what they're watching so you can explain it. And don't just say, that's inappropriate, but why is it inappropriate? You know, why is it wrong to have these types of violent acts against people, even people that you might consider bad people? You know, what does the church have to say about that? Again, to be not so much negative but positive in terms, and positive I mean in terms of describing what are the positive aspects that they should absorb. And in this way, you can allow them to be exposed to the media, to be exposed to what's around them, to participate in that discussion rather than just shielding them from it, and to give them the tools and equip them to make solid choices on their own when they get to that. So I think being present, if you come into my living room, you know, we got Xbox, we got PS3, we have to do the Wii and all that type of stuff. But, you know, we'll play together. We'll play Smash Brothers together. You know what's interesting? What's coming back now? You talk about all these violent video games. I have a son now. I've reached that stage. I have a son in college. They play Mario in college. It's all these retro games, these old games.
Old,
you know, these things, the kids kind of, you know, as they get a little bit older, you see how they kind of, you know, get out of that type of nature. But if you come to our living room, you know, my daughter's desk is in one corner of the living room. One daughter, my other daughter's is there, and mine is in the corner. My son will have his laptop, and we'll work together down the living room. And so this way, you know, you can see what's going on. Not that you're spying on your children, but that there's nothing hidden. It's not a question, well, I want to watch them and see what they're doing, but there should be nothing to hide. Right?
Nothing to hide, and also they see the good work ethic of their parent, right?
Sure.
You're doing your work there too.
God
Father,
will.
It's always a pleasure to do an interview with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for the honor.
Speaking of honor, what an honor to have you listening to our broadcast today. Thank you for spending the time with us. This is Come Receive the Light. I'm Mike Trout. Our host each week is Father Christopher Metropoulos, and our website is myocn.net. Don't forget to let your friends know about the broadcast and about the ministry through the Orthodox Christian Network. That's myocn.net. We'll be back here at this same time next week. Special thanks to our executive producer, Father Spiro Bobotis, and our programming director, Ann Dankert. Remember, we appreciate your feedback. You can find us on Twitter and on Facebook, and we would love to hear your comments. Just go to the website, myocn.net, and you'll find the links there. I hope we'll see you next week at this same time. And in the meantime, remember to always have faith in what you listen to.